Hello and welcome to episode 13. Unlucky for some. That's why.
Of course.
That's why.
Yeah,
it's been so
that's
bad.
Why it's been such a bad day.
I've had such a bad day with bad luck and things just stopping us from recording this show. But we're finally here. Everything will screw up later on, but so far we're doing all right. But that must be why it's episode 13.
Yeah, of course it's episode 13, so that's why it's all messing up.
Yep. I'm Gelada.
And I'm Sephron.
And this is the UK-based podcast, Life in Hex.
Life in Hex, people. This is Life in Hex,
coming
UK.
Coming to you from the UK.
Well, it doesn't really make a difference if it's UK Life in Hex or US what? Life in Hex, because there isn't a US Life in Hex. So
it's just...
Life
yeah.
in Hex. Mm-hmm. Yes. Anyway, I digress.
We got a couple of emails.
We did indeed. Got some emails.
It's more housekeeping, really, because one of them's like kind of an email thing. But first of all, we got an email from Darren Kitchen, who is one of the cast members of Hack5.org.
Yes.
Technolust Productions is their sort of company name thing.
Oh, right, yeah.
It says, "Hey guys, just checked out episode 12. Great job. Thanks for the plug, and we look forward to fragging you soon." That's on their game server that they've got. "Let me know if you guys ever need anything. We might be calling you up on that, Darren." You might not want to have said that.
We might want to bring you up on that favour.
But yeah, it was really great to sort of, you know, more fame contacting us. We've had Stankdog, we've had Darren, and it's just... You know?
If we can get some other big shots,
big names,
internet
Steve
names.
Ballmer, coming on to that. More on that in a moment.
Bill Gates.
Yes. So that was one of the emails. Thank you very much, Darren, for sort of saying that we're doing well.
Yeah, thank you very much. Words of encouragement are always welcome.
It definitely, always. Words of encouragement help us through the dark days of episode 13s.
Yes, yes, indeed. The days where we are tired and can't be bothered to really do it, but we do it anyway because we love you.
Yes. Also, and this is a housekeeping note, we're doing some research. If you looked at the website, then you would have seen the little announcement thing that I put. We're doing some research into sort of UK podcasts and the independent media scene as a whole. So Vidcasts, Moblog, Zoblog.
Exactly. Et cetera, et cetera.
And we're doing that, the scene specifically in the UK. So US, we know, is sort of big scene, independent media scene. But in the UK, there's not a lot of it. We found a few portal sites and stuff, but there's, you know, it just seems very quiet, especially the tech area. Tech independent media. There is none, you know, there's so much in the US. And, like, do you know any UK podcasts that are like us?
No, I don't know any UK podcasts other than this one.
Exactly. I've spoken to people and they agree with me. You know, like, they don't know any tech based UK podcasts. We seem to be the only one.
Hey.
So, see our site for more information. And we've had some contact from a guy called Stingray, who contacted me because I was talking to him on the Hack5 IRC channel, which is irc.hack5.org.
Mm-hmm.
Hack5.
Americanized bastard.
Yes, indeed. His website is 230volts.co.uk, and go and check it out.
What is it? I mean, I've actually
seen
it. Well,
I think he's got some projects planned as far as like independent media and stuff. I think he's got a podcast planned or something.
Uh-huh.
But it just seems to be like his portal, sort of like just notes and stuff about what he's doing, like a base almost. A bit like Dusty Dreams is sort of like a base for me. 230 volts is probably a base for him.
Yeah.
We really, really, really want some contact from some independent media shows in the UK, especially technology based ones.
So things just like this, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's beneficial to them as well, because we've got a few plans. You know, we're not going to say anything because we don't want to give the game away, but we've got a few ideas and plans just sort of churning over in our minds. And if we can have some support and some contact from other people, so that when we do something like this,
we know it's actually going to be worthwhile, and we're going to have something to work on. And
so please do contact us, and it would be very interesting to hear from you. So thank you to Stingray for contacting us, and Darren Kitchen for contacting us.
And if any of you lots out there who maybe do a UK podcast but isn't very well known, or a UK podcast which is, well, there isn't any. We just said that. There's no UK podcast that are well known.
The other thing is, even if you are thinking about making a UK, you're a podcast and you're in the UK, that would also be very interesting to hear
from
you as well.
If you've got some kind of free accessible media on the internet, on whatever, right? Let us know. Mm. We want to know.
Yeah, we do. Especially tech-orientated.
Yes, definitely tech-orientated.
More than anything else. On the subject of tech-orientated, we're going to do exactly as we promised, and I'm going to do a tech section, a proper tech section, a big tech section, 2 pages of tech section.
Yes, and a tech section that's actually so in-depth that you've actually had to feel that you've needed to rehearse.
I did. I actually sat there and spoke it to myself about roughly what I was going to say, so I could get a feel for what I was going to do. So I'm going to do an overview on the different programming languages that are available to, but you can tell I'm reading this, can't you? I just switched into reading mode. Of the different programming languages that are available. Now, there's lots of programming languages, obviously, for computers, and I'm going to focus on the different types of people that there are and what might suit them. Hopefully, as I was writing this, I was hoping that I haven't made too many mistakes. I did research some of it, etc. Feel free to email in with corrections and your own thoughts and views. Also, if we miss out your favourite programming language, then please email on us as well. Obviously, don't go, oh, my fucking God, you noobs, you've missed out Fortran and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, you know, because to be honest, that's going to just get your email deleted and not cared about.
We can't go through all the programming languages that there are. These are sort of ones that I've had experience with, and from what I know, my own experience and passing on my knowledge through the interweb.
Yes, the global interweb.
First of all, before I start sort of going through programming languages and stuff, I need to make a quick definition of two terms that describe programming languages in my mind, sort of, you know, the things that class it, and that's high level and low level. High level essentially means that the language is user-friendly. It's interpreted by the computer in order to convert it into computer language. Computer language, binary essentially, ones and zeros, machine code.
I know, mm-hmm. I know.
It also means that the computer handles a lot of issues that normally take ages to code, so like memory allocation, buffers, structures, hardware interaction, that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
To give an example, Python, www.python.org, is a very high level language by default. Now, low level is the opposite, really, something like C. And that lets you do all of these things, lets you handle the memory allocation, etc. Now, obviously, this seems more difficult. You know, you don't want to really be handling buffers and all this sort of thing and strange code and stuff. It has some advantages. Firstly, you have full control, obviously, over everything that your program does, which is more important if you're doing things to do with hardware or you're doing things that manipulate memory in the way that they're not supposed to be manipulated. Secondly, it also means the program runs a lot quicker because it's only tailored for exactly what you want to do and requires less dependencies. For example, if you were using Python and you were using certain objects, then those objects wouldn't be needed in the, you know, the next user that ever runs it will also need to have those objects, those modules. Programs often end up smaller because the example of that is something like assembly code, which is possibly the lowest level you can get without actually like scoring in ones and zeros on the hardware or something. Yeah. Is extremely small. Steve Gibson, for example, he codes grc.com. Plug us. He codes surreptitious message. He codes in assembly, and all this stuff like the shoot the messenger thing that disabled the messenger service, and the thing that disables universal plug and play, the leak test, all this sort of thing. They're like 40k programs, and they do loads of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing that I saw that was really cool once was graphic demos written in assembly. 124 kilobyte files, yeah, and they were like entire graphical movies. One I saw was like a city, a shot of a city, clouds and everything. Obviously, really low level, you know, they're actually drawing the vectors rather than having any text just to keep the file size down. And like there's explosions and the whole thing's exploding and stuff. I must show you sometime, it's really cool. That mouse works. So now sort of go on to the different types of people, you know, to class about what programming languages people might use. Firstly, there's like the software engineer, you know, the main programmer type person who might program for a living or something.
The kind
like
of
that.
Person you'd find if you went into, I don't know, a game developing house, mm-hmm. a Microsoft software development mm-hmm. section, etc. Mm-hmm. That kind of stuff.
Yeah. They're going to be using C and its visual counterparts. They're going to be using C++, C++, yes, yeah. etc. And visual C++, which is like the Microsoft stuff. C is low level, and C++ is low level but with some high level features like objects. They're very robust. I mean, for example, the entire of Linux, the whole Linux kernel is all coded in C.
Yeah.
So that kind of gives you an idea about, you know, how robust it is and also how low level it is, because the Linux kernel has to handle all the hardware and all the memory and everything. So it kind of demonstrates what I was saying about low level.
Mm-hmm.
A software engineer may also use C# and other .NET languages. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I know that there are loads.
Mm.
Visual Basic Sharp, maybe.
All those type of ones, yeah.
ASP Sharp. They are .NET languages, and they are They are languages for Windows only. They're for coding applications for Windows. And they seem to be used a lot where things require network interactivity. and they require application interactivity. For example, do you remember when we were talking about Windows Vista, and we were talking about the like the application framework that allowed applications to talk to each other? That is an example of the sort of thing that .NET languages can maybe do. .NET programs obviously require the .NET framework, which is like a 25 meg downloads.
Yeah, it's about 25, 26 meg.
It's the bane of some people's stuff because it's a resource hog, and .NET programs generally are a bit of a resource hog for what they do.
They're not great. I don't particularly like using any.
But you often find that, I don't know about you, but small utilities on the internet, they often seem to be coded in .NET.
Are they?
Especially things to do with the internet, like any applications that are coded that interact with DIG always seem to be written in .NET.
Yeah.
You always have to get the .NET framework for them. So that's the software engineer. Now, one of the big ones that I've got here is the hacker, because obviously, we're kind of white hat hacker orientated.
Yeah, yeah, we are.
Talk about hacky stuff and that sort of thing. Now, hackers will be using lots of different types of programming languages. So they, and that depends on the situation. So they might use a high-level language like Perl, which is what I use. I was, my main first programming language has been Perl. That's what I started with.
Most people in the hacker scene especially agree that Perl is a very competent tool to use. So.
It is. I mean, it's essentially like Bash scripting on steroids.
Yeah.
It gets things done very efficiently, and it is one of the best ways of going, I've got a bit of data here, and I want to move it over to here and change it in the process, and I want to do this every day in a cron job. Perl can do that for you. In half an hour, you can whip up a program that will adjust stuff and do backups for you and all this sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Where am I? Hackers may also use Python if they are coding something that's more robust. For example, the IPTV player Democracy Now, which I almost feel was written by, it wasn't written by software engineers. It was almost feels like it's been written by hackers because they've used stuff from, the Mozilla engine, and they've used Python and all this sort of thing.
So use a bit of everything.
Mm-hmm. A lot of Google is powered by Python. The whole of their back end is actually Python. Yeah, all their stuff is Python. Apparently.
Didn't know that.
If you go onto labs.google.com and you go on like their coding samples and stuff, you'll find that they're written in Python.
All right.
Python source code. Hackers that are a little more grey hat may code in C, and often one of the things is like any hacker needs to know a bit of C. I don't. Because I hate it. I just scares me. Memory buffers, not good. Int void and things. But grey hat hackers and black hat hackers may be coding in C because C is the way to go when writing buffer overflows.
Yeah,
we've discussed denial of service in a previous episode.
Yep.
That was our other techie episode. And if they're using a vulnerability in the system, the chances are that the software, the denial of service software, has been written in C, and the vulnerability has been coded in C to exploit whatever software. This is because it is very low level, and it allows you to control all those buffers. The other thing that you often see in C, although you can see it in other things, is shellcode. Now, shellcode is a piece of machine code, which is like assembly language stuff.
Yes.
That can be relocated in programs, and it's often used as the payload when you're exploiting a software bug.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if you're doing a buffer overflow attack, you may have shellcode to go into the buffer that you overflow into. I recommend that you see Hack5 for their buffer overflows with beer.
Oh, yeah, that's quite funny.
So you imagine when the beer overflows into the next one, a little bit of shellcode gets dropped in there as well.
Yeah.
And that would be where the shellcode comes in. And that might... it's called shellcode because what it then usually does is spawn a shell, like a command line or whatever, and then maybe bind it to a port so that the hacker can connect to it. So that the hacker can connect to it over the internet.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of depth to how hackers use programming languages, and there's a lot of programming languages that they might use. It's especially worth checking out example code of things, especially if you're going down that grey black hat route.
Yeah.
Obviously we don't condone writing vulnerabilities, but you may be doing it for the greater good. You may be looking to find those vulnerabilities so that you can tell the people who wrote it, you've got a vulnerability in your system.
Yeah, but surely white hat hackers do that as well.
Yeah.
But they do the exact same thing. Black hat hackers do it for the fact that they want to get the rush out of compromising a system.
Very true. That is a very good point. There is a flaw in my script.
Yes, there is.
There's also the systems administrator, the sysadmin, who is kind of like a hacker, because they're going to be wanting to get things done. know, they might be wanting
he's gotta,
to...
Well, he, she's got to know the stuff to be able to get all the stuff done that they're required of.
They're likely to use Bash scripting and Perl if they're working in a Unix environment, because they might be doing stuff... An example might be a backup script or something, if you want a very specific backup utility or log rotation or something like that. In a Windows environment, they're probably not going to be using Perl, but maybe they make batch files or use Visual Basic. I actually don't know. This is something that I'd like someone to email in.
What would they use?
Exactly.
Why would they need to use it maybe in a Windows environment?
If you're a Windows sysadmin, please email in and tell me if you use any programming languages, you know, as far as, well, on your job regularly.
Yeah, as part of your job.
I know that Unix sysadmins would, you know.
Obviously, yeah.
Quite often they'd be using Perl and stuff, but yeah. I just didn't
know
whether...
I mean, would a Windows orientated company using Windows orientated servers need the use of
any
kind of coding at all?
They're kind of restricted, really, aren't they, by what, Windows Server 2003?
Yeah. Well, if you know, email us.
Yes,
let us know.
Do. Now, my next group, which is where I'm going to be subtly focusing this on, because it's something that's interesting me recently, is a group that has only recently become a programming person, so to speak. You know, and that's web designers.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because, as a sort of like a little story, when I started web design, I didn't consider myself to be a programmer. You know, I was writing HTML and I was writing it by hand in Notepad.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have said that I was programming HTML. And even though, you know, HTML, it gets interpreted by a browser much the same way as a programming language interpreter interprets code. Programming language interpreter.
Yeah, that works. That works.
But HTML, if you look it up, the definition of it is a markup language. And that's where text is combined with extra information about the text. So in the case of HTML, you might have, you know, whether it's a list or something. And so it's the structure of the text.
Mm-hmm.
You then have, you might combine that with cascading style sheets, CSS, Counter-Strike Source. and that's not even a programming language either. That would be considered a style sheet language.
Yes.
Another example of a markup language, if you're thinking there's just HTML, would be TeX. Now, I don't know how you pronounce that. There's something fishy about... T-E-X. It looks like TeX.
Yeah.
But I remember reading that you pronounce it like TeX something. Because the guy who wrote it wasn't English. He was like Scandinavian or something.
I bet most people still call it TeX, though.
Yeah. But I remember, you know, if you know, email me because I've forgotten the link that explained it. But you wouldn't consider that to be a programming language, because what it is you use it to write thesis, scientific thesis and white papers. And it basically, it just formats the text into a PDF.
Oh, right, okay. So it's a computer language which helps write complex formulas into computer-readable things.
Well, not even that. It's actually a markup language. It is a visual, you know, how do I explain it? Say you've got a bunch of text and you want to make it into a PDF. TeX is kind of like a standard for writing scientific documents and stuff, as in making them into a PDF. And so you write them just in Notepad or whatever, but you have certain tags, much like you do in HTML, and the result when you process it is a PDF that's all formatted and has everything looking nice. But then it's also got a very good way of writing formulas, as in like mathematical formulas, in that you can write them in this certain structure and then it makes them easy, you know, it just puts them into that PDF and does it all properly. It's just like using a word processor, except that you're using a markup language to create the result, which makes it easier because you try writing formulas in Word.
Obviously.
So that's what TeX is, but you wouldn't consider TeX a programming language.
No.
So you shouldn't consider HTML a programming language. However,
getting back to the point,
the World Wide Web, is much more than just HTML now. There are now server-side languages such as PHP and ASP. Mm-hmm. That's pre-hypertext processing and active server pages. You also used to see Perl a lot on the web.
Yeah.
In the form of CGI, which is Common Gateway Interface. I knew that, of course. CGI is actually a protocol, not a programming language, and that interfaces external applications. For example, Perl with web servers.
Yes.
So you used to often get people writing Perl programs, but that outputted HTML and formatting on the web. You don't see that a lot now because PHP and ASP do it a lot better. They do it differently.
Yeah.
PHP is pre-hypertext processing and is probably the most commonly used server-side language. Basically, anything that is anything uses PHP.
Yeah.
If, like, online shops, PHP, cadcomic.com, PHP.
Yeah, most things use PHP.
Yeah. WordPress, PHP. Even newer, and this is where I'm honing down onto this one, is Ruby on Rails.
Right.
Now,
not heard of this one.
Yes. That's why, you see, it's a big thing at the moment. It's a growing thing because of the advent of Web 2.0.
Yes.
You know about Web 2.0?
Yeah, I know. Well, I know Web 2.0 and all those applications and types of things.
But basically, it's a collective of saying the new things that seem to be coming out at the moment, the sort of like the interactive, taggable, what's the word? Folks know me type delicious, and dig, and all these sort of things are very Web 2.0. And Web 2.0 incorporates Ajax and Ruby.
Yeah.
Now, Ajax is the something, 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 something. which, I don't know, it's advanced JavaScript something something extension.
I have heard of Ajax before.
Yeah, it's basically where a page gets something off the server, probably an XML file, and puts it back onto the page without you reloading the page.
Yeah.
Google, lots of Google stuff. Gmail, Ajax, Ajax, Ajax. Google Calendar, Ajax.
Google Maps.
Google Maps, very Ajax. Probably the first biggest Ajax implementation, where you dragged and it was loading the things behind
Never actually have to reload the page as you were dragging around.
Google Suggest was probably the first thing I saw that used Ajax.
Oh, that's true,
That obtains the search results of the server. Ruby on Rails is an open source web application framework.
Is that buzzwords?
Possibly.
Can I do the buzz sound?
Yes.
Bzzzt.
Yeah.
Yay.
And it's essentially Ruby. Ruby on Rails and Ruby are completely separate things. They're not the same. That doesn't make sense.
No, that makes actually no sense.
Yeah. What Ruby on Rails actually is the programming language Ruby, which you don't really hear of at all.
No.
Never heard of it before, Ruby on Rails. And what Ruby on Rails does is focuses that onto web applications and web applications frameworks.
Right, okay.
So it's actually a framework written in Ruby. This is quite difficult.
For other stuff.
For web applications. Yeah. This is quite tricky because I don't understand this yet, which is why I'm talking about it to sort of further my understanding, because it's really cool. It's an object-orientated language, much like Perl and Python. You know, you use objects. And it's extremely high level. Very, very, very high level. What was I saying? Yeah. So Ruby on Rails is focused on creating web applications with extremely small amounts of code. That you know, as you're programming, you have to type in, because essentially it means Rails is insanely easy to create pages that manipulate databases.
Yeah.
So the famous thing is the how to set up a weblog in 15 minutes, and it is a movie of someone coding a weblog, as in a blog, the entire framework, all the stuff for making posts, comments, and everything in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's insane. Literally with one line of code. You create it's called Scaffold, and it literally has the listings of a database. You can add new stuff to the database. It knows where all the stuff's going to be because of the way you've organized it in the database. It's just stunning. Okay, I want to start coding in it. I really do, because it's just so cool.
It does sound quite cool.
It's insanely cool. You can create wikis, the entire back end, not someone else's wiki, your own wiki coded yourself in 15 minutes and 30 minutes. Just insane.
That's quite
powerful.
Amazing. Yes.
Mm. So basically, I hope that's given you an idea about programming languages and if you think you class yourself as a hacker or a sysadmin or a software engineer, well, if you're a software engineer, you already know. Then you know, go and check out some of the programming languages I've mentioned, especially Ruby on Rails. If you're a web designer, Ruby on Rails.
So you're basically trying to plug this now, aren't you? You're trying to make sure that people understand how powerful it can be.
It is extremely powerful. You can use it to do anything on the web that manipulates databases.
I mean, to be honest, perfectly honest with you, I'd never heard of it before until now. And if it's as powerful as you make it out to be, I think more people should know it then. So
definitely. Basically, Ruby's idea is that it has already coded all the stuff that normally would take you hours and hours to code yourself. So in PHP... when you're writing a whole web application from scratch, if you're using databases, you've got to code all the reusable code that you might use to, like, you know, create the database tables, delete the records, etc.
Yep.
You've got to actually write that code, and you've got to make it reusable in the rest of your web application. Now, that's what takes so long when coding something like this. But the idea behind Ruby on Rails is that that's already been done.
Yeah.
Someone's already done that. Someone's made that framework. You just have to put what you want to do on top of it,
yeah,
and it does it.
Yeah.
It's just brilliant how even insane things like plurals. So say you're wanting to make a blog backend.
Right. Yeah.
So you create the table blog. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And you create the framework, which is one command to create the start of the framework, to create the start of the web application. And a blog should have posts. Yes.
Yes.
You obviously.
Yeah.
So you create a table called posts. Yeah. Plural. Notice the plural posts,
yep,
sir. Yeah. You then go into your little Ruby environment thing. One command, which is whatever, and you use post rather than posts, and it knows to link that with the table posts, the plural posts, and it actually has proper English. It can determine that if you put person, it links to the people table.
Yeah.
That's how insanely just...
So it's able to understand more human-orientated,
yeah,
wording.
Mm-hmm. So then, after you've done these three things, you can then literally, after changing a few config files and stuff, type in one line of code, and you can create posts, edit posts, and delete posts.
Yeah.
There's no front end for viewing it that looks proper, but you can go on, and there's a bit literally scaffold for typing in new posts, and it will list the posts, and you can view the posts and delete them.
In very short period of time.
I can demonstrate for you in like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
That's how cool it is. So web applications, check out Ruby on Rails, way forward, and I will keep our listeners up to date with how I'm getting on with it, because it's insane. So also some links to check out regarding Ruby on Rails, because that's, as you can see, where I've kind of focused down onto.
Yep.
Obviously rubyonrails.org, the actual main site, very cool looking site. Mm-hmm. The wiki, which is wiki.rubyonrails.org, guess what it was coded in? And the OnLamp Rolling Ruby with Rails tutorial, and I'll put a link on the site because it's a long URL and I didn't tiny URL it.
Fair enough.
So it's basically the tutorial to end all tutorials that will get you started.
Right.
I've also ordered a book, which was about £16.
Ew.
That's how interested I am in Ruby on Rails. I went out and just ordered this book.
Wow.
Because it was, you know, highly recommended as this is the book to get, and it's called something. I'll put the link on my site, on our site. Because
the site.
Yeah, the site. Because I've forgotten what it is. But I will also do like a little book review of it.
Yep.
Say, you know, a tech book review maybe next episode or something, just to say whether it's any good and whether you should go out and buy it if you're interested in Ruby.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a follow up on what we've done. I really need a drink.
I think one thing we should mention, I mean, it just came to me as you were talking about it, is going back to what we often mention it, but BinRev.
Mm-hmm.
They did a very in-depth program talk one episode, like episode 90-odd or something.
It was quite a while back.
Was it
in the days of Stankdog?
It was in the days of Stankdog, because I remember listening to it one time while playing Garo, most likely. Very detailed web talk about all different coding languages. Mm-hmm. In fact,
similar sort of thing to what we
It seems to what you talk about. It went into more detail because it's a lot longer.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of being a 20-minute thing, it was like an hour-long thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was then really just focusing on that. And they were talking about different things like Perl, like Python, etc.
They were focusing on the hacker sort of side of what we were talking
about. Pretty
much,
yeah.
That's what they are. So if you were interested in the hacker bit that I was sort of glazing over, then go and check out that episode of BinRev.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it is. It's like in the 90 region.
Mm-hmm.
Just check it out.
I remember
try and find it.
There's also some cool stuff about Perl on BinRev. They did a whole episode on Perl once.
Yeah, it's called Perl, yeah.
That was what got me interested in Perl, actually.
Yeah.
So go and check that out if you're interested in Perl, because I was like, ooh, maybe I should actually have a look at this. And I did, and that started me off, really.
If you're not overly interested in this programming talk, you know, you look more into the game session of this podcast, not to mention, I wouldn't bother because it will probably most bore you silly.
Well,
it's just like, it's a couple of guys talking about really
Perl.
Complex coding stuff. But if this is the kind of thing, you know, if you're into coding languages, you're into maybe want to start yourself, or you know a lot about it, but you want to hear what other people think about it, go and check that out as well. It's very
informative. So that was my long-awaited programming tech talk. I hope it's been interesting. It's going to take me a long time to edit and shuffle about.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay, after editing, I noticed that we didn't have any music. We forgot it. So here is Talk About by Slackjaw, and you can go and visit their website at naked-grace.com. We put them in the Life in Hex Extra show, so if you like that, then it's similar sort of stuff, so hope you enjoy it.
could fly, said the boy out the window. Half of me is slipping away. Young and I'm bound by the lack of my days. Want my other half to lift me.
Gaming. Do you want to talk about this or should I?
You can talk about this because my throat needs to recover.
Fair enough. I go on to our gaming section. Now, I know we keep saying we're not, but I mean, this whole gaming section totally backs up the idea that we are total Nintendo fanboys and we love Nintendo.
But you see, it kind of backs up that we're not. Because I don't like it.
Yeah, you're dissing it, but I'm not.
Okay, so you're the Nintendo fanboy, and I'm the Nintendo...
But you have to admit, this show is very much Nintendo-orientated.
We say this every
time. When was the last time we ever did anything, Xbox or PlayStation?
When was the last time you had an Xbox 360 or a PS2?
No. I have an Xbox.
There you go, then. Yeah, but that doesn't count. That's old. It's old news.
So it's the new Nintendo news, and if you haven't already guessed what it is, it's the new name for Nintendo's latest console. So it was codenamed Revolution,
which, in my opinion, should be the name.
It's quite a cool codename.
Dolphin was a crap codename. Dolphin was a good codename.
This was quite a cool codename, but they've renamed it. Mm-hmm. Well, not renamed it. They've named it now. They've actually named the console. Mm-hmm. And they've called it the Nintendo Wii.
Wii!
Okay.
Now, we're going to be laughing for a while now. If anyone's listening in the US, you're not going to find it funny because it's a British slang word for piss.
It's very colloquial.
Yes.
Is that how you say
it? W-I-I is a homophone for a British slang word meaning urine.
Well, actually, isn't it the other way around? I mean, it's not really a slang word, is it?
It is a slang word.
You don't use it out in the street when you're talking to, like, the chavvies,
still,
you know, going,
"Hey,
man, I would just win for a Wii." Yeah.
Yeah, but it is still a slang.
It's a way for little kids.
It's an official slang word.
It's a way for little kids to talk about, you know, that kind of private business
it's
without
slang
actually...
slang that's in the dictionary.
Is it?
Yes.
Sweet ass. It's piss in the dictionary, then.
Probably. Anyway.
Anyway, the sound Wii is also the sound that we Brits use for...
piss. Urine.
Going to the toilet.
Yes, you know, urinating.
You're going to go for a wee. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the polite way of telling people without actually using the word urinate or toilet or everything, which is too technical. Mm. Well, toilet's not technical. Urinate it.
This is really random. Toilet humour. We have sunk to a new low. Sunk being the operative word.
Oh, Jesus. But anyway, so that is kind of why you don't like
it. It's kind of a self-explanatory news, isn't it? The Nintendo Revolution has its name, the Nintendo Wii. End of discussion.
But, I mean, you hate it beyond all measure, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't hate the console for it. And, you know, I'm still going to buy the console. It doesn't make me feel any better or worse about it. I still think the Nintendo Wii is going to be amazing. You see, that doesn't that sound funny? The Nintendo Wii is going to be amazing.
Nintendo's Wii.
Yeah. Nintendo Revolution is going to be amazing. Sounds so much cooler.
The Rev.
The Rev. How can you can't shorten the Wii.
The N-Rev.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God, that sounds like N-Gage.
N-Gage. but essentially...
Look, I mean... I know what you're thinking, but at the same time, you got to see you got to look at it from the perspective of Nintendo, right? We'll get onto your theory about Nintendo Japan and the West, okay? We'll get onto that theory in a minute. Mm-hmm. But you got to see where Nintendo's coming from this. They're trying to make an extremely family-orientated console which can appeal...
Speaking of me, I feel like I'm being told off like a child. It's like you're explaining it to
me. I'm sorry. It's... The Nintendo... I've lost my train of thought now. Mm. Nintendo are trying to appeal to a massive family audience because PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360, very much the teenager slash young adult, gamers. Mostly male mm-hmm. gamers, mm-hmm. right? Ourselves, mm-hmm. all right? Nintendo are trying to get everybody into the gaming
market.
They
are the family
they always have. Game. They always have been
they
seen
have.
As that.
Nintendogs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Things like that.
They are basically, they're almost trying to get that other market share that Sony and Microsoft haven't got. They're like, well, instead of competing with them, why don't we just get this big market share that they're
because
not using?
I suppose, I agree with what you're saying, because, like, when you think about it, the PS3, well, not PS3, the PS2 mainly, really does own the teenage slash young adult male market, mm-hmm. especially in the West. Mm-hmm. All right, in America and the US, the PS2
in
is...
In America and the US.
In America and the UK, sorry, mm-hmm. my bad. it's the biggest selling console. Mm. Is it still the biggest selling console? I would think it is.
Don't know. Yeah, something like that.
The slim PS2 would be most likely more so than the Xbox 360.
I think out of all time, then
yeah.
Yes.
But it's only. But you think about how many adults have bought one, like adult post 25, mm-hmm. 30 odd, right?
Not
how
more.
Many kids bought it pre 12?
Mm.
How many? OAPs bought it. How many females bought it?
How many families bought it for their whole family?
For the whole family, not just for a present to like their
teenage kid,
14-year-old kid. Mm-hmm. Right? They don't. Mm. Which is this is a big market opportunity. Which is why I agree with what you're saying. Nintendo are trying to get that market and said, well, we can't compete with that, but we can make even more money if we go for the less popular but yet more prosperous area,
the bigger market.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there is the teenage gamer market share is slim compared to the family, everyone else sort of thing.
So even though the teenage one is guaranteed to get you the money, because it's, obviously they're the ones who are going to
be
buying
slogan.
And stuff.
Nintendo is for everyone else.
Nintendo, everyone else is gaming.
Yeah, because that's essentially what it is. But then my theory, which obviously coincides with all of this, is that Nintendo, you can't blame them, obviously, because they're a Japanese company. And they have a huge market share in Japan. I mean, they're basically like, there's no competition.
Like what we were talking about last night, in Japan, Nintendo equals gaming.
Yeah, obviously Nintendo are going to be focusing towards that.
Because it's their biggest market.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think the name Nintendo Wii is a Japan... I mean, it just looks... it. If you imagine it in that sort of, not Comic Sans, but like thick, bold font, like Arial type, sans serif font, it almost looks Japanese.
Yeah.
No, just Wii. It just, the double I and everything, just...
I know what you're coming
it
from.
It screams Japan.
Anyone who knows Japanese or speaks Japanese or
is
can read
it... Is
it
a Japanese character?
Yes. Is the sound or the word Wii a Japanese character meaning anything, or does it represent any kind of kanji or anything? I'm not sure because I don't know any kanji at all. If you know, email us, let us know, because maybe that's... more of a hidden meaning behind the name.
Bit like naming it the Nintendo S.
Like we said last night, or the Nintendo R for Nintendo Revolution.
But I feel kind of let down by Nintendo, because the West now is almost becoming like a sideline for them. It's like a sideline project. The West.
Yeah.
Japan, this is us, and like over there,
There's the biggest main superpowers of the world, you know, whatever.
And they're just the West. They're not our main market. They're our extra market.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's fine. I'm quite happy. The console's going to be great. But it's just, you know... I don't blame them, but it's just my personal thing that, to me, it feels like I'm being let down by Nintendo.
But at the same time, you could moan at... You could say the same thing about if you're a Japanese person, talking about the Xbox, for example.
I've got nothing.
The Xbox is an English word, and it uses the English characters. Mm. The word PlayStation can be used in Japan because, obviously, the Japanese do use English words in their language. And so can the word, you know, GameCube and Nintendo 64 and Game Boy. They work in Japanese. But Xbox doesn't, because Xbox is...
Implies the character X.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
I've got nothing against what you're saying. And it's, you know, I've got no... I'm not trying to fight against not having the name. You know, that's fine. It's just, it's really hard to explain. But it's just my feelings. I feel that this is kind of proving what I've been worried about, that we are really the... We are... Oh, my God. So many confusions.
Yeah, yeah. Nintendo aren't focusing on the Western, yeah, basically.
So that's the Nintendo Wii. The Royal Wii.
Shut up. On with it. I'm going to slap you,
silly. Multiplay I-27 has just gone, which was a big LAN event in the UK. One of the only LAN events.
No, if you remember last week, last fortnight, we did say when we were doing the podcast, it was on right now.
Mm, it was.
While we were doing the podcast. Mm-hmm. But now it's passed, you know. Or it's,
And I heard some good reports, you know, DeFay. And, but also, Multiplay I-28 has just been announced. It was announced yesterday. Yeah, I'm on top of these things.
Yeah.
Which was...
You mean your RSS fees are on top of things?
No, it wasn't RSS. I was checking the website. It's going to be on the 25th to the 28th of August. Now, I don't know whether I'm going away or something.
Neither do I.
But we will let you know if we're going. I think Mix wants to go as well, but he doesn't even know yet. I haven't spoken to him yet.
It'd be good if all three of us could go.
Mm-hmm. But if anyone who listens is thinking of going, then please get in touch and we'll just keep your email address and let you know if we're going to go.
Yeah, we'll email
you
and tell
you. This is more relevant when it's closer to the time, but... You know, we could actually meet up if there was some strange coincidence that someone who listened to our show goes to Multiplay.
Why not?
You never know. But if there is, then it'd be great to meet up for some.
Maybe make a little life in Hex Table.
Mm, LIH, go under LIH. It's quite a cool lab tag, actually.
It's quite cool. LIH, yeah. What's what?
But yeah, we'd be really interested to sort of meet up and stuff. So I think it'd be great if we could
quite cool meet some fans.
With some owners. Mm. So, Multiplay I-28, 25th to the 28th of August. I'm going to actually look on the calendar when we go back in to see if I'm going away.
Yes, okay. Just a bit of news. I was going to discuss it a bit with you, but since we are running a little low on time, the game Trauma Center, Under the Knife, has just been released in this country. Mm-hmm. Now, it's been out in the US for quite a while. I think it's like last October or something.
Yeah, so it's like 6 months.
So it's been out in the US a while. I don't know why they took so long to localize it. I don't know why it took so damn long, but it's finally out in the UK, so I'm hopefully going to try and get me a copy of that.
All right, cool.
Because it's quite cool, and it looks quite interesting.
You play as a surgeon.
Yes, you get to Sorry, I should explain that, really. Trauma Center Under the Knife, you get to play as a surgeon in like a hospital and cut people open and do procedures. It's kind of like... I think it's kind of like a new genre of gaming for the DS. I mean, look at the game I showed you earlier, Phoenix Wright, Ace Attorney. That's like one of these kind of games where you play as like a real life profession.
Mm.
So maybe that's going to become maybe a new popular genre.
Mm-hmm. Go and check out tinyurl.com/D2RVQ because we haven't got enough time to talk. That's the IGN link for all the stuff about it, including the review. They gave it an 8, which was quite good.
It's pretty good,
8 out of 10.
Yep.
Impressive. You got some anime, just a quick
second. Just quickly, I mean, it's just some basic news, to be honest, because we really don't have the time to do any kind of review.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember last episode, I mentioned, the Death Note review.
Mm-hmm,
I did a review for...
Yeah, it was that weird, dodgy one that was like, yeah.
It's a bit, whoa, that's a bit strange. Mm-hmm. Yes. The bit where the kid can write down names in the book and it'll kill them.
That's the one.
But I don't think I mentioned it, but they're doing a live-action movie.
Really?
They're not doing an OAV, so it's not like an anime thing. Mm-hmm. It's actual live-action. It's actually actors.
Ooh,
right?
Interesting.
So they're doing a movie of this manga.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how it's going to work out, so I don't know if it's going to be good or anything. I presume it is, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not been made yet. But if you want to check out the trailer, so if you're interested in... It sounds interesting. Do you want to check out the trailer?
Mm-hmm.
It's at tinyurl.com, MUPW5.
Mm-hmm. We hope that that's the right trailer and not the other trailer.
Yeah, no, I think it is. No, it's the right trailer. I checked it out myself. I checked it out last night.
All right, cool.
It's a WXV or something.
It's a WMV.
No, it's stream. It's
an ASX.
Something stream. Like that, maybe. It streams in Windows Media Player, and it was horrible.
If you use mPlayer, you can dump that, just to let you know.
Yeah, you might want to try and see if you can get a downloaded version of the same thing. Maybe check YouTube. Mm-hmm. Might be something on YouTube, I don't know. But thanks to Anne for the info.
Yeah, Anime News Network.
Yeah, very, very, very good site, so mm-hmm. plugs to them. Mm-hmm. Always keeping you up to date with the latest stuff. Just some side news for those people who are interested in like the music scene. The Red Hot Chili Peppers are doing the theme tune.
Really?
Yeah. Cool. Their new song, California.
All right.
So that's kind of like beefs up how cool it is. Mm-hmm. So definitely check it out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so life?
We've gone in a completely reverse order this week.
We have, intentionally, to get the tech in there. And
exactly.
So firstly, me. I will do this as brief as possible, even though it's very interesting. I could go on because it was very interesting, but I've got some stuff on my blog.
You know, you didn't even tell me you were doing this.
No, I know I didn't. You're... I completely slipped my mind.
You just like, I just looked on the book. Oh!
No.
Oh. He went to this. Yeah. Oh, right, okay.
But go and check out my blog, blog.dustydreams.co.uk. I've got some notes on there and some stuff. On Wednesday, I went to the Institute of Directors, the IOD, that's IOD.com, mm-hmm. Annual conference in London. And it was in the Royal Albert Hall, which is a very nice place. If you've ever been, have you been to the Royal Albert Hall?
I have
did
indeed.
You go on that science thing?
Yeah, I went with you.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. I couldn't remember whether you went.
I was there with you. Mm. We walked round together.
Yes, okay. I went as a student. We had student passes.
Yeah.
But I kind of went, this is like, no, I just sort of.
What did you go under? Thing. Why did you go? Well, I guess because you. Business studies. Okay, mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was really an excuse to get... I think it was an excuse for our teacher to go to the IOD annual conference.
Fair enough.
But I kind of went on behalf of Dusty Dreams and Life in Hex, like member of the press, in my mind, because I actually wrote notes on one of the speeches to put onto Dusty Dreams.
Yeah.
I did it as sort of like... him. I wasn't a member of... You know
what I mean. I know what you're saying. You wanted... You did it as if you were.
Yeah. I'm only going to touch on it briefly because I've got notes on my blog, as I've said. Basically, there were lots of people in suits with lots of money. Essentially, that's
just cool. Like it's just showing off how cool they were.
Yeah, lots and lots of people. But there was Steve Ballmer, who was the CEO of Microsoft. eBay.co.uk's managing director. Steve Ballmer's the only name I could remember. The rest is can't remember. eBay.co.uk managing director and the managing director for Virgin Galactic. They were the cool ones. Mm-hmm. There was also the CEO of Cadbury Schweppes was doing a speech, and someone else who must have been so boring I cast him out of my mind.
Oh.
They were the interesting ones, those three. Steve Ballmer, eBay, and Virgin Galactic. The rest were a bit boring. They weren't very charismatic. Steve Ballmer was really, really interesting talk about Microsoft and leadership, which was the overall focus of the conference.
Yep.
I have notes on Steve Ballmer's talk, which are on the website. I did them this morning, I think. They're up there. And it was really cool. It was really great to not have to spend £250 and get into somewhere that is quite exclusive, really. You know, you have to be a director to become part of the IOD.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's quite exclusive, really.
That's very cool.
Mm, it was. Two mobile phones to each person.
And plenty of blueberries all around.
Yes.
I know I said blueberries. I know, I did on purpose.
Right. I spoiled your joke. Anyway, go on. Your life?
Yeah. I went up to a little thing called Collectomania. Mm-hmm. It's like a collection of comics, sci-fi memorabilia, film memorabilia, little bit of anime, gaming, trading, gaming, mm-hmm. and all that, etc. And it's just like a collection of all those kind of stuff put together. Mm-hmm. And I was walking around and I found this this model, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, it's an anime store. It was an anime store of all these anime models. Mm-hmm. And I saw this one that me and Packham have been looking on the internet mm-hmm. not the other day. Mm-hmm. It was really ironic that I found it, to be honest. Like the night before we were looking at it, I was like, oh my god, there it is. And it's a really nice model of the main character in Lupina called Naru. I think I've mentioned it before, most likely.
Probably.
So I thought, oh fuck it, and I bought it. And it was £45. Mm-hmm. So that's like, what, $80?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is quite a bit. But here's the but it's a lot more expensive on the internet as it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like $150 or something on the internet, really? If not more. So I got it for cheap, but it's really, really nice. In fact, we should have thought of this beforehand, but on the website was going to be a link to a picture mm-hmm. of it.
We could take a picture. You could take a picture.
There's plenty of pictures on the internet.
Be a bit more exclusive.
Oh, noes.
But yeah. So.
So yeah, it's really nice. It's not a doll, so it's a mm-hmm. Figurine. Mm-hmm. It's very nice. It's sexy. Mm-hmm.
We got some plugs and shouts and hints.
Hints.
Mm. Yes. Mm. First of all, plug mentioned them earlier. 230volts.co.uk. That's the numbers 230volts.co.uk.
Stingray.
That's Stingray off the Hack 5 IRC.
So go check his website out.
Plugs to Hack 5 again, because they emailed us.
Emailed us and plugged us for us plugging them. So if they plug us for plugging them because they plugged us because we plugged them,
we could end up in an endless loop of spiraling exponential plugging.
Yes, we could.
Which would be good for both of us.
That's not good. Actually, it is good, I suppose. Mm-hmm.
Also, shouts to Moonlit on the Hack 5 IRC, which was very small world.
It's very strange, wasn't it?
He emailed us, and then I met him on
the
Hack 5 IRC.
If you remember, how many episodes was it ago? Quite a few episodes ago now. He emailed us in saying, great show, liking it, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Crappity crap.
It wasn't crappity crap.
No,
it
wasn't, but
it was very good stuff. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Moonlit.
Thank you
Don't
very
listen
much.
To Gelada. He's not a nice person. Mm. We love you, Moonlit. Mm. Well, I love you. Hello. See you on the IRC channel in the back rooms. my God, I can't believe I'm saying all this.
And you think I'm going to cut this out?
Fuck off. No. But yeah, I mean, it was small world just to meet him on the IRC channel, and you were like, oh my God, Stefan, get on the channel. You know, we got a fan. I'm like, oh, well, cool. Nice to meet you. So that was good.
That's our second fan.
Wow.
We have a hint to pureownage.com.
It was... We shouldn't just say have a hint, because that's like giving it away.
No, it is a hint to pureownage.com, because, you know, they went off to Amsterdam.
Yeah, they did.
And Amsterdam's cool.
Amsterdam is very cool. I mean, it's in Holland, or the Netherlands, depending on which one you call it.
They speak Dutch. And they are...
They speak Hollandaise.
They are in in the mainland Europe. They are kind of bottom right of the UK, and we are all to the right of America.
Yes, that's right.
There you go for all your Americans who haven't got a clue where Holland is.
Yes, it's very close to the UK. But, they speak Hollandaise and Germanic.
Yeah.
That was funny. The Pure Orange crew went there. With the
Amsterdam?
I think they were visiting some forum posters, which are really, really big on the forums.
And also shot some stuff.
Yeah, they shot some... pictures and everything. Most likely have some of the stuff in the episode.
They went to Amsterdam to shoot footage. It wasn't, but they on as it was a sideline to actually meet members of the forum.
Yeah, yeah,
which was cool. But Amsterdam is cool, but we're cooler.
Yeah,
in the UK.
Yeah. I mean, they could do some filming in the UK.
They could do some filming, you know, in our garden.
Yeah,
in our
in our local city. You know, that'd be cool. You know,
around the house. Well. You know, they can sleep here.
Yeah,
yeah. I'll gladly sleep on the grass outside.
Jeremy or Doug or Kyle, they can use my bed any day.
Yeah,
you know.
With you still in it?
Of course.
Editing, no.
Hey, Jeremy.
Also, you have a plug?
I was going to mention this in the anime section, but decided against it because I don't have time. Plugs to a website called luperry.com. That's luperry.com. It's a subbing group, or he's a subbing group. I'm not 100% sure. And they do a couple of things, but mainly the one I'm interested in is .hack roots, the latest .hack.
Cool.
They do it a lot quicker than Anime Source do. So
go and check out them.
If you're into .hack roots, check out them for the highest quality of subbing. And I think that probably wraps up the show.
It does.
So I'm rather tired. And you're...
kind of unlucky.
And this has been Life in Hex.
It has. Episode 13.
Yes.
You were Sephiroth?
I was Sephiroth, I think. What am I?
And I would be Gelada, but unfortunately Gelada has been taken away due to a series of unlucky circumstances.
You are a man filling in for Gelada.
Yes, I am. And that's been episode 13, and we'll see you in 2 weeks' time.
2 weeks' time. Anything going to be happening between then? Anything we could just say look forward to? I don't think so.
Look forward to...
Ooh, we might have Pac-Man on the show.
Yes, look forward to possibly a special guest.
Yes.
Because we wanted him on this time. I wanted to actually make a quick apology right at the end to Pac-Man for not having him on this time, because I know you said about him like coming on or something.
Yep.
But because of the programming talk, we couldn't. But I do really want him on, because I've always been trying to get
him. I want to get him to do a review of Phoenix Wright. He was really, really interested in doing some of that. And he wants to do probably an anime review of some kind. So.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
It's all good. I'm Sephron.
I'm Gelada.
And this has been Life in Hex 30.
Your life is Sephron bought a doll. That's your
You're
life.
A bitch for writing that. I did not buy a doll. I bought a... I found it, and you can make yourself sound a bit like this. Coding languages. Beyond.
Dub, dub, dub.
You are a nub.
That rhymes.
Dub, dub, dub. You are a nub.
It was intense.
Yeah, but it was so cool. Dub, dub, dub. You are a nub.
Can we leave this now?
No, I like that.
Can we move on? You are a nub. Can we move on, please, to gaming? Shut up. Shut up. Moving on.
Okay, moving on. Moving on.